Good morning. It is 9 a.m. We are going to get the Workforce Committee underway. Winter, would you mind taking roll?
Chair Brown.
Present.
Vice Chair Del Carlo.
Here.
Regent Brager.
Here.
Regent Goicoechea.
Present.
Regent McGrath.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you so much. I will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
To the flag of the United States of America.
And to the republic for which it stands.
Indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. Before we begin, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washoe, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship and continue into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voices and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. For those of you who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 933-5568-7402 and passcode 555555. Is there any public comment at GBC?
There is none at this time.
Thank you. Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
None at this time.
I don't see any public comment here in Las Vegas. SES, is there any public comment on the phone?
Not at this time.
Thank you. Next, we will move to agenda item number two, possible action. Consider the minutes from the April 24th meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve the minutes. The meeting is written.
A second from Regent McGrath.
Thank you so much. We have a motion from Regent Del Carlo and a second from Regent McGrath. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. We'll move on to agenda item number three, Chair's report. I actually didn't present one today because I do think that this is a fairly straightforward, quick meeting, but I just want to say thank you to Daniel Archer and Natalie Brown and everyone who's been working on this and everyone on the committee for their support. I think we're doing some really great work, and I think this is an opportunity to make a lot of positive changes for our system. And so I'm just excited to continue the momentum forward. Okay, we'll move on to agenda item number four, handbook revisions, credit for prior learning. I'd like to invite Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, Daniel Archer, to the podium.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair. So Daniel Archer, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Today, we're really bringing forward kind of a reimagined approach to credit for prior learning for Nevada here. And the updated approach is student-centered. It eliminates some unnecessary barriers and expands opportunities to apply credit for prior learning towards degree completion. It really does all of these things while also building more consistency and continuity within our system as a whole. So this presentation really focuses on three key components. First, we're going to provide background on credit for prior learning. What is it? Why are we focusing on it? Why is it a priority? Second, we're going to highlight the path that really got us here. How did this work start? What have we done the last several months in this particular space, really the last year? Lastly, we're going to walk through the policy revisions and place really a special emphasis on what these changes mean for our students here, because that's what matters the most here at the end of the day here. So we're going to start out with really a foundational piece, and that is simply defining credit for prior learning. So you'll see that according to the Council for Adult and Experiential Learning, otherwise known as CAEL, credit for prior learning, which is often referred to as CPL, is a term for various methods that colleges, universities, and other education or training providers used to evaluate learning that has occurred outside of the traditional academic environment. So we kind of break this down. Credit for prior learning can be a number of different things. It can be achieving a requisite score on a standardized exam. It can be individuals who have achieved professional licensure. It can be individuals who have professional certifications. It can be individuals who have completed maybe a regimented and highly recognized training program. It could be individuals who went through military training. It could be a number of different things. I'll talk about this more in just a little bit. But the bottom line is really this. There's a lot of learning that occurs inside the traditional classroom. I certainly respect that, acknowledge that, recognize that, respect that. But there's also a lot of learning that occurs outside the classroom. I think it's very important that we as a system recognize that, meet students where they're at, and award credit where credit is due. So that's really credit for prior learning in a nutshell here. The big question is why? Why is this a priority and why now here? We're doing this because I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's also common sense. But equally important to all of those things, we're doing it because the data supports it here. When you break down credit for prior learning, it meets a real need that we have in Nevada and presents multiple opportunities to improve access, affordability, success, and completion here. So it really checks a lot of those key boxes here. So when you look at this through a Nevada lens specifically, our adult student population in the state, we're talking about enrollment of individuals who are 25 and up, has dropped by 23% in recent years. At the same time, we have 321,000 adults in the state that have some college and no degree that are not currently enrolled. Again, 321,000. While all of this is going on, we are approaching the national enrollment cliff, which I think everyone is well aware of here. We had a presentation on this last March when we were at NSU. You'll remember that this is based on the high school graduating classes significantly declining. In the coming years, essentially the birth rate has gone down. That's catching up to higher education. As a result of that, that traditional age population that we've primarily relied upon is going to be a lot smaller. And this is going to hit Nevada in the 30s. So the good news, it's not hitting us immediately. It's hitting the upper Midwest and the Northeast and California. It's hitting them really in the immediate future. It's not hitting us until the 30s. But knowing where we're at now and kind of where we're trending going forward here, we've got to reposition our system to better serve adult students. And we've got to start really making these changes now to ensure that we are adequately prepared for the future. And having a robust credit for prior learning policy is really one of the foundational pieces that's necessary to make this happen because, again, it repositions us to attract more adult students and serve them better at the end of the day. I think it's also very important to recognize the value of credit for prior learning from a student success standpoint. A national study that was done compared completion rates of students who earned credit for prior learning versus those who did not earn credit for prior learning. And the students who did not earn any credit for prior learning exhibited a 27% completion rate. 27% completion rate. We're talking about the percentage of those individuals who earned a certificate or degree. So 27% for those who did not have credit for prior learning. The students who earned credit for prior learning exhibited a 49% completion rate. So a 22 percentage point difference there when you compare those who had credit for prior learning versus those who did not have credit for prior learning. That same national study, completers who had credit for prior learning were compared to students who did not have any credit for prior learning. The ones who had completed or who had participated in credit for prior learning completed in significantly shorter time periods, which resulted in cost savings for the students. So this is also very much an affordability driver. So anytime we can do something that advances both success and affordability, I see that as a win-win right now. And the last thing to touch on from a data perspective is really the long-term enrollment here. There's a perception among some that credit for prior learning might adversely impact enrollment on long term, but the data, very important to know, tells a very different story here. In that same national study, students who earned credit for prior learning actually went on to complete 18 more traditional credit hours than their peers who did not have any credit for prior learning. So, in other words, credit for prior learning recipients didn't stop with the credit that they earned through credit for prior learning. They kept going and completed 18 more traditional credits than those who did not earn any credit for prior learning. So the idea that institutions lose a lot with credit for prior learning in terms of the enrollment department doesn't really add up here. Credit for prior learning is more of a credit builder than it is a credit blocker. Again, it's more of a credit builder than it is a credit blocker. In terms of timing here, kind of how we got here, this work really started this time last year, talking about late spring and going into summer of 2024. We had K-12 partners reach out to us, express concerns about the lack of consistency involving credit for prior learning, which I'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. We had our NCHE institutions express that we could be doing more here and that credit for prior learning offers a real opportunity for growth in our system here. During the same time, Regent Brown became very actively engaged in this work here, and she expressed concerns about some of the disparities in the CPL space. She also recognized the significant opportunities that CPL provides and really kind of gets this. So she's been on board from the word go and has been a huge champion of this work. So certainly appreciate her leadership in this space here. Fast forward to early fall. This is where we started to put the pieces together on the strategic plan. And in doing so, I went back and listened to the strategic plan listening sessions that we had across the state back in 2021 and 2022. And I wasn't here during that time period. So this was incredibly valuable for me to go back and listen and learn. But basically, we had 13 of these across the state. We went around, some of these were on campuses, some of these were off campus. We went around and asked our constituents and groups, what are the things that we're doing well? Where are the areas where we can improve? Where are the opportunities for growth? And one of the recurring themes that emerged was that we needed to be more active in the credit for prior learning space. That came up in multiple listening sessions across the state. Different individuals essentially said the same thing. So accordingly, that was integrated into the strategic plan. So fast forward to December of 2024, Regent Brown kind of set the tone for this work during her chair remarks. She noted that we were preparing to do some really significant work in this space here. So that really set the stage and really the foundation for a lot of this work. Then in February and March, I updated both the workforce and the ARSA committees on this work and really covered some of the challenges and opportunities with credit for prior learning. And then getting into March and April, we shared the draft policy language with multiple constituency groups, the chief academic officers, our otherwise known as our academic vice presidents, the registrars, the faculty senate chairs, those who would be most impacted by these proposed changes here. We did share the proposed changes with them during that time period. So now we're going to really get into the meat of the presentation here. We're going to talk about the policy revisions and really place a special emphasis again on some of these pragmatic takeaways here. And when it's all said and done, what's this going to do? And again, what does this mean for students here? So this really first starts with establishing alignment with common credit for prior learning. And just to remind you, because again, we did talk about this in February, one of our challenges is based on sort of a lack of coordination with common credit for prior learning here. And so one of the big areas is with advanced placement, otherwise known as AP. And of course, we've talked about this. I think everyone's familiar. But just to kind of remind everyone, this is an advanced class, high school class. It's typically taken during the senior year. It's taught with collegiate level expectations. It's taught by a high school instructor. The student takes the class, and at the end of the year, they take an exam. If they earn a requisite score, there's opportunity to earn collegiate credit. And so the most commonly administered AP exam in both Nevada and nationwide is the English language and composition exam. So if you earn a 4 or a 5 on that exam, in terms of how that plays out at NCHE here, you'll see that we have 6 institutions that award 6 credit hours. So they award English composition 1 and 2. Then we have one institution that only awards 3 credit hours. They only award English composition 1. So obviously there's some differences here. An AP English teacher described this as a moving target, which I think is a very spot on analogy here, because it kind of depends on where you go here. We're one system. We have one score range, but again, we have different credit outputs. It really depends on who you ask and where you go. There's not a really clear centralized answer in terms of what credit is ultimately awarded. So these inconsistencies have been noted a number of times in a number of different settings. It's come up in one-on-one conversations I've had. It's come up in smaller group meetings. And just earlier this month, it came up at a Clark County School District board meeting. And concerns were expressed about why NCHE has not aligned AP scores. That was a specific issue that was discussed. This is one of those things I think that's it's safe to say it's going to keep coming up over and over and over. It's not going to go away until we really do something about it and really solve the problem. And we've got a plan to do that here, which I'll highlight in a moment here. But just to kind of drive the point home, just one other example here quickly. CLEP exam. This is very similar to an AP in that the credit that you earn is based on earning a requisite score on an exam. This is something that's taken at our testing centers, at all of our colleges, universities. And essentially, if you earn a requisite score, again, you have an opportunity to earn collegiate credit. We're looking specifically at principles of accounting. So in terms of how this plays out within INSHE, you'll see that one institution, if you get a 50 or higher, that's what College Board, who oversees this, they recommend that you earn collegiate credit if you have a 50 or higher. Then you get financial accounting and you get managerial accounting. You get 6 credit hours. Two institutions say that you should get 3 credit hours, that you get financial accounting. And then we have one institution that says you get 3 credit hours, you get more of a general elective credit. And then we have 3 institutions that say you do not get any credit. So again, we're one system. This is the same score on the exact same exam, and we have 4 different credit outputs here. So again, kind of depends on who you ask and where you go. There's not really a clear target here. As you are kind of looking at this, and you're looking at these 4 targets here, and as you see these imbalances, I would encourage you to think about this from a student perspective or even a parent perspective, because when they see these imbalances, I think it creates mixed messages and it creates confusion. I think it's a real issue for our families, but it's also a real issue in the work that we do with our K-12 system, because high school counselors and teachers help students navigate these processes, and when practices differ, it complicates their efforts and makes the navigation significantly more difficult. So I want to emphasize that institutions were never our institutions, were never told to align. It makes sense that they have it, because these types of things are not typically going to happen organically. I think this is an opportunity for the system to collaborate and make this happen. So it's not a problem of wrongdoing or ill intent on the part of our institutions. I want to make that very clear. But I think it's very obvious it does create challenges. But with that, I think it also creates opportunities to do better for our students. So what we want to do moving forward is really move away from kind of the moving target approach and utilize a one target approach. Essentially, what we would have here is for each exam, there is one centralized target. So one system, one target, the same credit at all 7 institutions. Again, one system, one target, the same credit applies at all 7 institutions. So students are shooting for one target, and in turn, all of our institutions are awarding the same credit when a student achieves that target or meets that requisite score. So I think this provides simplicity, it provides clarity, it provides consistency. I think it does a lot of important things from an execution standpoint. The how are we going to do this? We're going to bring faculty from all 7 institutions, all 7 teaching institutions together in discipline-specific groups, and have them make recommendations on system-wide requisite scores and the corresponding college credit. So English faculty would be in one room, history faculty would be in one room, political science faculty would be in one room. And again, they would be reviewing course content, exam content, making recommendations. Those recommendations would subsequently be submitted to our Academic Affairs Council. That's our chief academic officers, our academic vice presidents there, who would kind of finalize the process here. So in the end, I think this puts us in a position to solve problems. It allows us to advance our strategic plan, and it really gets, I think, a series of small victories that really will add up over time here. So I see multiple things, multiple advantages to doing this work, and we plan to start this work in the fall when our faculty are back on campus here. So immediate plans to address issue. I think this is something, again, where we can rack up some small victories that will add up over time. Next thing I want to get into is expanding credit for prior learning. When you look at existing policy, prescribed exams are really sort of the main tool that is in the CPL toolbox. So we're talking about things like advanced placement and the CLEP exam and another one called International Baccalaureate. Well, this is very much an important foundational tool. That by itself is pretty limiting here. It doesn't recognize the knowledge and skills that can be acquired through other valid channels that are out there here. So what we've done is we've added more policy-defined tools to the CPL toolbox. So we've added in policy, we've explicitly added professional licensure. So individuals maybe who have a pilot license, maybe they have a real estate license, they've had to demonstrate knowledge and skills on a licensure exam that qualifies them to work in that field, chances are there's going to be some carryover, and that would equate to some collegiate level credit. So we have that in there. We've also added industry certifications. This is particularly common when you talk about computer science and information technology. Microsoft, you have Adobe, you have something that's called CompTIA. Again, individuals have to pass these certifications. Again, they've been able to demonstrate knowledge and skills in a professional setting, and chances are that carries over in a lot of cases to credit that would be earned in a traditional classroom environment. We also have added portfolios here. This can be done in different ways, but just one example would be somebody who maybe they've worked in graphic design for a number of years, and now they are working on an advertising degree. They could bring a portfolio of their work that they did as a professional into a faculty member, and the faculty member could evaluate it, and chances are that would result in some collegiate level credit because they've been able to demonstrate knowledge and skills that they acquired in a professional setting that really carry over to collegiate level credit. And then we also added other exams as deemed appropriate by the institution to provide sort of a layer of flexibility here. And doing this work here, there could be another prominent national exam that comes up. There could be something that could be designed on the campus. So again, it provides that added flexibility. So I think when it's all said and done, many students bring a multitude of skills to the table. And I think going forward, we have to be very flexible. When with more tools, at least policy-defined tools, we can adapt to different learners and help more of them really finish what they started. Thinking about those 321,000 students, again, who have some college and no degree that are not currently enrolled. So very important to note that we do have some grant funding and some support that will help us maximize these tools. We've got a grant that's going to kick in the fall that Natalie's going to touch on a little bit. I think that will help advance this work, that will help guide us as a system, but will also provide really tailored individual coaching to all of our 7 teaching institutions. So we look forward to doing that work, and that's really one of the bigger steps, again, going into the fall with this work here. So next thing I want to talk about is credit for prior learning specifically related to transfer here. So there are differences in how credit for prior learning transfer work is applied on our campuses here. And I think this really, again, reiterates the need for some system-wide policy here. And so when you think about transfer, I think it's very important to compare how we treat traditional coursework versus how we treat credit for prior learning. It's important to emphasize because sometimes there is sort of an imbalance in how they're treated here. And so this kind of illustrates that point here. Again, we're looking at transfer work. We're looking at transfer work that comes in via traditional coursework, and we're looking at transfer work that comes in via credit for prior learning. So just as an example, if a student earns an A in English 101 at Institution A, and then they transfer to Institution B, that credit transfers with no issues. Institution B sees the transcript, it's all good, it transfers, no issues. But if the same English 101 credit was earned through credit for prior learning, say through, again, AP Advanced Placement, it's sometimes a different story. In some cases, Institution B will not accept the transcripted AP credit at face value. Instead, they will require the student to contact College Board, reorder official AP score documentation, which also requires the student to pay a fee in many cases, and have those scores submitted to Institution B. So instead of a smoother transfer, the student is now jumping through extra hoops simply because the credit came from credit for prior learning. And this adds time, cost, complexity to what should be, I think, a relatively straightforward process, especially when the transcript from Institution A already confirms that they earned the credit for prior learning credit. So just like with traditional transfer credit, the transcript from Institution A should be enough to transfer in credit for prior learning, but it's not at some institutions. And I want to make it clear that I don't believe there's any ill intent behind this practice. I would guess that it's likely the result of some longstanding precedent, probably something that has been in place for a long time that is simply sort of carried on. But as we evolve, I think we have to periodically revisit longstanding practices. We have to be cognizant of any barriers, and we have to be as student-centered as possible. I think those have to be cornerstones in the work that we do here. So we know that there will always be some barriers that are outside of our control. There's always external barriers that we can't do anything about. But I want to be really clear, this is not one of them. This is something that we can control. This is something that we can improve. And we're proposing to do that through policy here. Now, this is straight from the proposed policy language here. You'll see that states that credit for prior learning, once transcripted by an NCE institution, is transferable on the same basis as the credit had been earned through regular study at the awarding institution. So this creates a more balanced approach here. They are on really sort of equal footing here. So this will eliminate the barrier that I talked about before. It makes transferring credit for prior learning more efficient, more simplistic, more affordable. And I want to emphasize that this is not some random policy that we pulled out of the air. There are multiple states and systems across the country that have this policy language in place here. So this is modeled after a best practice. And I also say that I worked in a system that had this type of policy, and I was a registrar, so I was actually applying this policy on the ground, and it worked very well. And then not only that, I ended up working at the system office there, and one of my roles was to oversee the complaints, both from students, faculty, staff. All those came to me, and I never had a single complaint on this because it worked, and it worked with the student in mind. So just the last piece I want to touch on is some really restrictive language that's there that is really focused on the community colleges. There are several parameters that, again, only apply to our two-year sector. These limits were intended, I think, to provide some structure here, but over time, they've created some unintended barriers. You'll see that these restrictions include cannot accept more than 30 credit hours from credit by exam, cannot accept more than 16 hours from non-traditional sources, and cannot accept more than 15 credit hours from credit by exam for a certificate of achievement here. So these parameters really limit opportunities for students who can demonstrate knowledge and skills through CPL. And these parameters don't really align with national best practices. I want to emphasize that the two-year academic officers were very supportive of us removing these limits here. So with that, we are proposing to remove these sort of outdated caps to help create more seamless seamless completion pathways. So that language we are proposing to eliminate. And with that, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you so much. I have just a lot to say, but first I do want to give the other committee members a moment if you had any questions or any comments about the presentation we just got from Vice Chancellor Archer. If you do, just, okay, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Brown. And thank you, Daniel, for such a great presentation and all your work behind this. And especially your leadership, Regent Brown. I think this is really a game changer for our students, and I couldn't be happier that we're doing this. And I just feel like we're really setting ourselves up for success, not only the system, but really the students. And that, I think you said 321,000 students out there in Nevada that don't have, they have some college but no degree. There's our enrollment growth right there. So we would really be remiss if we, once we get this policy in place, if we don't really go after this big time, all the institutions. So this is really good. I'm happy that this is in the workforce, and we're going to get the policy changed today so we can move on and get up to national best practices. And I thank you, Daniel, for bringing your national expertise into Nevada on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Regent Gogachia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my question is, all right, how do we move this forward, or what's the matrix? Clearly, we're going to support it coming out of this committee. It's only reasonable. It makes sense. There's a ton of workplace experience out there that isn't being recognized. And I really appreciate looking at this. But again, then how do we move it forward?
Well, I think today is a big step. So if I'm going to let other people chat and say there, and then we'll take a vote on it. And then it really, the onus goes back to the NCHE staff and our academic affairs officers to make sure that this is being implemented and we are making changes from a system, across the system. This just had to be from the top down. We needed the time and, you know, I say it at every meeting, but really this team that we have here at NCHE is small but mighty, and they really have worked with our institutions to make sure that we are tackling the important issues. I mean, Daniel and I have a list of, you know, 14 other things that we also want to tackle, but this is the biggest, and this will be the most impactful, and this will be the ones that will really get the ball rolling. Is anybody else from the committee
Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
Okay, but will this have to come back before the full board then fairly quickly then? Is that how we assume it'll happen?
Yes, I believe that's how that would. So we have a meeting in July, and I'm going to ask the chair if he'll put this on the agenda for that.
Thank you.
This is Regent Berger. May I talk for a moment?
Definitely.
So at the very beginning of the presentation, I guess what I want to ask is, when we're talking about tracking students, or where are they and what can we do, how do we track those that are electricians and plumbers, but they go to school where the electricians are? And I guess my concern is I'd like to make sure that we're getting really good factual numbers. So I think that would be important to know that they're not leaving they're leaving maybe the NCHE system, but they're still being very educated.
Yeah, and then, this is Daniel Archer. Natalie, do you have any thoughts on that particular issue? I want to put you on the spot here, but.
Sure, Natalie Brown for the record. Well, I'd say when they are starting at an NCHE institution, we do have that data, obviously. Now, where we have some limitations with the NPower data and tracking longitudinal after they leave our system, I think there's still some areas that we need to improve, and we are improving and working with our partners that work within the NPower system. So I do think it's something that we're looking at. I think there's room for improvement and something that we're working towards.
Regent McGrath.
Thank you, Chair. Just want to applaud your leadership on this, Regent Brown. I think we all on the committee really appreciate it, and I think the greater board will as well. And thank you, Daniel, for the presentation. My question is a variant of Regent Gokuchia's, so it may be premature. I was interested in what we thought was the timeline for implementation. How quickly would it be implemented, you know, over one academic year or several? But again, if that's perhaps premature, we can wait on that. But thank you again. Really, even the presentation was incredibly clear. And really, I think this is just for you to have zeroed in on these goals and made this happen, I think is really going to be dramatically good for our system. And I thank you for that.
Daniel Archer for the record. So yeah, just to elaborate a little bit on the timeline. So obviously one of our bigger priorities is standardizing AP and CLEP and International Baccalaureate. So I think there'll be a big focus on that in the fall. We are going to be working with Student Ready Strategies, Inc. and SHEO, the State Higher Education Executive Officers. We got a grant from them. We've just had kind of one meeting on this. That grant is gonna kick in the fall. We have a credit for prior learning kind of meeting planned with institutional representatives. That'll be on October the 10th. And so I think that we'll probably be able to elaborate on the timeline a little bit more. So I'd be happy to come back to the Workforce Committee at a later date and provide updates on this, because I know it's really important work and we want to make sure that we're on track and that we see progress.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Regent Del Carlo and then Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Regent Brown. Daniel, was that October 10th? Will Regents be invited to that, or is that really just for academic affairs people? Because I saw that in something I was reading in the last couple of days and put that on my calendar just in case.
We would be happy to have Regents there. So please, yeah, by all means, it's open invitation. We'll provide more details at a later date. We're actually probably in the next week or so, we'll get the location nailed down. But yeah, all of you are welcome to come for sure.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Brown. I'm not on this committee, so I won't be voting on this, but at this time. But I do very much support it. I did have one question or suggestion that I'd like to hear from Vice Chancellor Archer on. I don't see that there is any reporting structure to the board regarding credits that are given for CPL. So I think that might be interesting for the board to see, and also graduation of those who have been granted this type of credit.
Right.
I don't know if that should be within the policy or something as part of our strategic plan coming back, but I think that would be of interest to the board and to our direction moving forward to understand the impact of this.
Yeah, Daniel Archer, fantastic point, and couldn't agree more. That is actually something Natalie and I met with Ann Milkovich not long ago, and we do have within our computer system, we do have some data elements. There's kind of a preset screen, and there are ways for us to track credit for prior learning, and it's in our existing package because I think TMCC is actually using it right now. It's my understanding. So we are going to tap into that, and we do want to be able to disaggregate, like, this is how many had AP credit, this is how many had military credit, this is how many had international baccalaureate. So yes, we absolutely do plan to build that infrastructure. Right now, we have not historically collected that, but we are going to build that in, and we will have reports, and we can certainly share those at a later date and then really start to look at some of those trends you talked about.
Thank you. And at some point, as you mentioned, Ann Milkovich, I think it would be wonderful if we could have this as part of our IR dashboard as well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. And thank you, Mr. Archer. Chair, I appreciate all the work you've done to bring this all together with your team. It's really important. I've been noticing this for years, teaching at CSN and other things. I had a question, Mr. Archer. Thank you for that presentation. It makes sense. But I'm sure you've thought of this. How does this affect the financial needs of NSHE? Are we taking, it's that proverbial saying, taking a good thing too far? Is it going to come back and bite us in the proverbial donkey later, that we'll miss out on students that would be paying? Do you see what I'm saying, Mr. Archer? Vice President Archer?
Yeah, thank you, Regent Boylan, Daniel Archer. So yes, I get where you're coming from. I think that the idea is this can attract a lot of students that we're not getting. And not only that, the data point that I talked about earlier in the presentation, there was a specific data point that showed that individuals who earned credit for prior learning actually went on to earn 18 more traditional credits on the campus. They earned 18 more traditional credits than those who did not have credit for prior learning. So there's kind of a retention factor in. You get these students, and then they're far more likely to be retained. They're far more likely to ultimately graduate. So I think you get them more long-term. So I do think there is sort of a payoff at the end. So I don't have a strong concern about losing enrollment here. I think if we do this the right way and we can kind of cast a wide net and attract students that we're not getting right now, that I think we'll be in really good shape.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, because there's nothing like experience, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Regent Boylan. I really appreciate that question, because it is important that we frame this, that you know, our economic impact is much more, is exponentially more important than the dollars we bring in. The money that the state gives us, it is our job to have a, you know, a ripple effect that actually brings a larger economic impact, right? One job in is not just, let's say it's a job making $75,000 a year. That's not $75,000 a year. That's times X number of money back into the economy that's uplifting families. So I really want to talk about it in that way, that we are the workforce driver for our state, but we are also a huge economic impact. You know, in my day work, I do economic development, and a lot of people want to talk about the CapEx of a company. But the economic impact of a company is usually exponentially more, even if their CapEx isn't. So I want to take that same framework here, and it's not just, can we get, you know, $10,000 from a student? You know, can we get them through this, then what would they do for our economy? And then that's the case that we make when we go to the legislature and saying, yes, we are graduating more people and this is the economic impact. And I think that would be a really important way to frame this. I also appreciate the fact that we're bringing up the fact that our community colleges, the workforce bloodline for our state, have these extra barriers. And that is an unfair you know, hurdles and red tape that we have put on this. And I'm really excited to take some positive steps. And then I think it's always just important to go back to that systeminess approach. The fact that, you know, we have different seven academic institutions treating things differently. But then I think you pointed out something that is just really compelling to move this forward, which is, you know, even across our system, if, you know, institution A offers credit for prior learning and they transfer to institution B, that credit for prior learning that was awarded might not actually show up in the same capacity. That is such a stunning thing to say out loud, because we're not even setting them up for success to stay within our system, which is why we see people going to other institutions outside of ENCHI. And so I am so excited for this. I think it's such a huge move for us. So just want to say thank you yet again for everyone's hard work. If there are no other comments, seeing none, I would love to move someone to make a motion for approval to make revisions to the board policy, Title IV, Chapter 14, Section 18, 20, and 21, and Title IV, Chapter 16, Section 20, for expanding the provisions of credit for prior learning in alignment with the 25-23 ENCHI strategic plan.
This is Regent Del Carlo. I'll be happy to make that motion.
Do I have a second?
Second. Happy to second.
Second, Regent Gokichia, or whoever.
I'll take the motion from Regent Del Carlo, second from Regent McGrath. I'd like to, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the motion passes. Thank you so much for all your hard work. And thank you so much to the committee members for your support in moving this forward. I think this is really huge. All right, next we're going to go to agenda item number 5 and invite Assistant Vice Chancellor of Workforce Development and Community Colleges, Natalie Brown, to give us an overview.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Chair Brown, Vice Chair Del Carlo, Natalie Brown, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development and Community Colleges, for the record. So you've heard a little bit about the Constellation Initiative, and I'll share a bit more details as we have them. But the Nevada System of Higher Education has been selected to participate in the Constellation of Support. This is a prestigious national initiative led by Student Ready Strategies, SRS, and the State Higher Ed Executive Officers Association, SHEO. So this multi-year effort, and this will be 3 years, is focused on scaling credit for prior learning across institutions as a strategic lever to improve student access, affordability, and completion. And Nevada is one of two states that were selected for this initiative, so it's us along with Washington State. So that's another, just, I'm so excited about this. As part of this initiative, ENCHI will convene a system-wide working group supported by national CPL experts and change management facilitators. The project will host a statewide workshop on October 10th, 2025, and this workshop will include 3 in-person workshops hosted by ENSHE to guide institutional strategy, campus engagement, and implementation planning, quarterly coaching sessions tailored to unique needs of participating institutions, ongoing access to virtual change management platform offering tools, templates, and collaboration space for cross-institutional learning, as well as a 20,000 capacity building subgrant provided to each institution to support local implementation efforts, and participation in a national learning community contributing to a final public report highlighting progress, impact, and replicable best practices. So currently, each ENSHE institution is forming a cross-functional team, including faculty, student services, workforce education, and data leads, to lead this work locally and ensure broad-based collaboration. So this initiative complements ENSHE's ongoing priorities to expand credit for prior learning policy and practice. The passage of the changes to the current policy is going to be a huge boost in the work that we're doing in this, so thank you all for that as well. Especially for military-connected students, adult learners, and working professionals who are seeking faster, more affordable pathways to credentials and degrees. So we're excited to bring national expertise and strategic resources to this effort and look forward to sharing continued updates as the work progresses. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And yet again, thank you for seeing these opportunities and going after them. Natalie has consistently found these incredible opportunities that just add layers that help us actually move this work along. So thank you for that. And I'm excited for the October 10th session. I think that'll be a really nice way to bring our system together. And it goes back to what Regent McGrath and Regent Gogachia were asking. How do we implement this? I think getting people together, having a conversation, hopefully this can happen in an academic year, which means, the catalogs have to be updated, policies have to be changed, the way we do this. And I think this gets started with, obviously, our vote, the board's vote, the Daniel and Natalie's incredible work, and then the summit in the fall. So I'm very excited. So thank you so much. Are there any comments from people on the committee? Regents not on the committee? All right. Thank you so much, Natalie. All right, we're going to move on to new business. Do I see any new business? Seeing none, we're going to move on to public comment. Is there any public comment at GBC?
There is none at this time.
Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
There's none.
I don't see any public comment here in Las Vegas. SES, is there any public comment on the phone?
There's none at this time.
Thank you so much. All right, and with that, we'll close the meeting of the Workforce Committee at 9:48.